Some of the Russians are saying that we have a climate change weapon and that we're using it on them and other Central Asian countries. And as you know, Russia is going through a record drought. Hundreds of people are dying a day. We'll talk with Scott about that and other earth changes on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we've got Scott Stevens, award-winning television weatherman who for decades began investigating the claims of Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden that North America was being subjected to full-time weather modification and manipulation. And during the course of that personal investigation, he was the first to discover the primary reason for the now global chemtrail phenomena. Scott now co-hosts a weekly radio program, and he's with the Genesis Communications Network. He also is a principal with the Blue Water Alchemy, working to bring about a shift of the human consciousness in concert with events surrounding 2012. And this is almost a momentous anniversary for you, Scott Stevens, isn't it?
Well, it is, because I got to thinking the last time I did a big, big show with you guys. It was nearly 5 years ago. And that kind of led to some events happening in my life and changing the direction that I was going, which, you know, wasn't something I wasn't already considering. And then we had Katrina happen. So, and I think between that and Katrina and those hurricanes and the federal response to Katrina, I think we kind of put a little bit of geoengineering and weather modification on the maps. You know, otherwise it was just this little nest of conspiracy, you know, all surrounding the chemtrails. And we just needed to move and blend the two, the chemtrails and the weather modification, because from where I'm sitting, you can't separate the two.
You know, and I found this Russian statement by this Russian scientist very fascinating. He is the deputy director of what is called the Strategic Culture Foundation, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, at the moment, climate weapons may be reaching their target capacity. And may be used to provoke droughts, erase crops, and induce various anomalous phenomena in certain countries. And he believes that we, the United States, has this device. What do you think of that?
Well, I think they've had it, and I think we've had it. And I think once you understand some of Nikola Tesla's work, and he said in the 20s it was going to be very simple to manipulate and play with your local climatic conditions. So I can't imagine 70 years down the road and with trillions of dollars in defense budgets that, you know, somebody hasn't done it and hasn't done it very well. So that statement is not a surprise. And honestly, George, it may be a symptom of creeping disclosure. And that's something that I think the powers that be have an agenda for, is for disclosure. And that would surround so many different topics that have been, you know, heretofore kind of off limits and super top secret and some things that we won't discuss. But, you know, more and more of these scientists, not necessarily from the States, but from these other countries, you know, are getting it. And they're brave enough to talk about it. And I congratulate them for it. Because,
you know,
honestly, all you have to do is look at the sky and see the geometry and see the behavior of the storms and the planes. You know, it's readily apparent to me, at least, that something's going on up there.
And do you think it's just under the guise of global warming, climate change? I don't think so. There's more to it, isn't there?
My opinion is that there's more to it than that. You know, I kind of came to the place a couple of years ago where they needed to kind of present global warming. They needed to have something going on in the weather that they could eventually come back and tax us for. And so I think, as we saw with the ClimateGate leaks, that there was a concerted effort to generate a public momentum, a feel-good momentum, so that we could pay a 1% or 2%, you know, tax on international financial transactions, and who knows how these things grow in time, you know, to the World Bank, so that they could compensate countries like Pakistan or like Russia, you know, for climatic events. And so I think that whole global warming umbrella was created for that purpose. And I really struggle. You know, where's the true baseline? You know, if the Russians are geoengineering, if the Americans are geoengineering, if the Chinese are geoengineering, how are we going to know what the planet's really doing? How is it possible to get a baseline of data to compare? And that's,
you can't. Not if it's being manipulated.
No, you can't. And not if you've got, you know, fleets of aircraft up there intentionally, you know, creating cloud cover. And once you create that cloud cover, even on a small scale, you alter the energy budget of that region. And if you put more planes and more planes for whatever purpose, and we'll get to that a little bit later, you know, then you change how much sunshine comes in during the course of the day, how much energy arrives, you know, on the surface of this planet to then radiate and warm up that layer of the atmosphere that we all live in, and then it traps it at night. You know, so that's got to be, that has to be a part of this global warming discussion, and it hasn't been, at least not officially in any mainstream scientific circles, and it needs to be.
You know, and to me, Scott, there's two phrases here, that one is dark, one is not. To me, weather modification sounds good. It sounds like, you know, if we have a drought, we want it to rain. You know, the Native Americans had their rain dances, so they tried to modify the weather. Sounds like it's a good, peaceful intent. And then there's that dark phrase, weather manipulation, which is what this Russian says that we're doing to Russia right now and some other countries. So you have these two similar phrases. One seems good, the other seems dark.
Well, and I don't have a problem with us understanding how the climate system works, how to tweak it or adjust it to some degree. But what I would really like to see is public oversight. You know, when I was doing you know, TV weather back in Idaho. Idaho Power has, at least in I think 2002, 2003, had a budget for weather modification upwards of $13 million, which is a pretty good chunk of change. But it was to increase the watershed, the snowpack in the watershed during those winter months. And by their analysis, they got about a 13% increase in snowfall, so that they could run that through their hydro plants and then sell the power out to the farmers and to the consumers. So what happens to Wyoming? You know, that water may have ended up in the Wyoming watershed.
Sure.
It may have ended up in South Dakota. And this is where you've got to have really, really good computers to model the atmosphere. And these models have got to be very good if you're going to go about tweaking the atmosphere to that degree. And it's my opinion that the militaries of the planet have that. They've got technologies. They've got computing power. They've got surveillance to know exactly what they're doing and to what degree they're doing it. And I think that's a place where the chemtrails have, are front and center, to be honest with you, is they need surveillance of the skies, and that's what they're there for.
And let's talk now about chemtrails, if we can, for a moment, Scott. You know, this entire phenomenon started coming to our attention years ago from a number of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, originally you would think, come on. Then you'd look out there.
That's what I thought.
That's what I thought. What got you to believe that something hidden is going on with the chemtrails?
Well, from about 99 to 2005, I didn't, with the exception of Clifford Carnicom site, didn't find a chemtrail site that dove into the phenomena that a meteorologist wouldn't get up, you know, pushed back from the desk after reading it and laugh. And so I had a real tough time figuring out, you know, kind of what was going on. But I thought, well, with my experience, my access to data and information, I should be able to figure it out. And it wasn't until I think August of 2004 that I was in eastern Idaho and saw a 747. Painted up green, which was not a color I was, you know, terribly familiar with. And then he laid a trail down. The plane was low and slow, you know, from the northeast corner of the sky to the southwest. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's one of them. And so after seeing that first blatant trail laid across a blue sky, I'm like, okay, there's something up. And I thought the only way I'm going to come across the purpose of this is through photography. And so I bought four webcams, two computers, and some time-lapse software and set them up. But it was 4 months before I caught, with these, you know, these cheaper Logitech webcams, you know, a flight pattern that gave the purpose away. And they were simply up there measuring, marking, setting up the geometry to which entrains the jet stream or the flow of air. And, you know, the Weather Service sends up balloons or radio sounds twice a day from about 150 sites across the country to sample the upper atmosphere. Well, my goodness, let's just buy 1,000 planes, outfit them, and then go sample the air directly. You know, so we've got, you know, what the Weather Service is privy to information-wise, and then there's the other that the powers that be have, and there's two completely different worlds. And those trails are up there. So these people know what the atmosphere is doing. They can measure the orgone, and whether we're in, you know, a dead orgone or a live orgone, we're up there measuring the drift of the air, you know, and if they'll apply an electromagnetic solution or a pulse from HARP, they'll run flights out there. They'll run trails across these holes that appear in the sky, and then they get direct measurements of what's going on, and that surveillance then comes back to a computing center as data, and they'll run the models. If what they're doing up off the coast of Alaska is going to dig a deeper low off to California in 3 days' time, and they're happy with it, they'll leave it alone. If they're not happy with what the models are saying the weather's going to do, they'll apply another electromagnetic solution and then grid it up with trails so they can measure what they've just done, the effects of it, and then back into the computer models it goes. So it's this constant watching, surveying, and tweaking. And one thing that they do is they work with what's coming. Absolutely. It's easier, you know, to tweak a storm a little bit in one direction or another, pump up a ridge of high pressure slightly ahead of an inbound trough. That slows it down a little. It may dig it a little bit deeper. But this, there is a playbook. There's got to be a playbook that they're working from. So when we see these disasters with the fires in Russia, and we see the flooding in Pakistan and China and the nation's heartland, you know, this was something that they talked about, you know, weeks to months prior. It's just that simple.
Did you talk about chemtrails when you started looking at them on your TV weathercast in Iowa?
I would mention, because you know, as you understand what they're up there doing, as a forecaster, you know, my goal is to get the most accurate forecast in the hands of my audience. And so I got to the point, especially that last year, of having no problems of saying, you know, that there'll be trails or contrails that likely mush out into a deck of high clouds, you know, fading the sunshine, you know, and that's kind of annoying in December and January when you're hungry for the sunshine or, you know, up in the mountains and want that warmth on your face and it's taken from you. So I would share that with my audience. I'd probably been a little braver now in hindsight. I probably would have said a little bit more, but I really tried to keep my nose clean and not dive into that, you know, per instructions from my general manager.
Well, they came at you in a roundabout way anyway, eventually.
That's usually how it works. But, you know, then that frees you up to talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So and it opens other doors, other opportunities, and you're always grateful when those show up.
Scott, let's talk about HARP.
Mm.
And if HARP is being used for weather manipulation, and I want to get your full take on that, how can they control it? How do you control something that you bombard into the skies? So, one, is HARP that weather machine that this Russian is talking about? And if it is, how do they control it?
Well, it could be. It could be, but I think it's only a small part of the equation. And I think when you have conspiracies like this, they will let me talk, they will let others talk, because we don't grasp the grandness of the conspiracy. And so we could talk about HARP, but I would speculate that its role in this is probably under 20% of the activities. I'm honestly more concerned about low, mid, and high orbiting, you know, military satellites that have directed energies technologies on them. We know aircraft have a ceiling, and they've got a service ceiling, which is for these commercial planes somewhere, you know, you could push it to the upper 40s to low 50,000 foot range. then what do we have between that altitude and, say, where the lowest of the satellites would reside, which would be sub 150 miles? There's this great void. And I think that great void is populated by the orbs that we've read, and we have photographs that I've seen. You've probably seen them as well. So I think we have this second technology that is not on anybody's radar, no puns intended, but they can go up there and then they can sit over a location and emit, or you know, or work in concert with other points, other vibrational sources. And when you get dozens, hundreds, thousands of these, you know, in a specific geometric shape, you can create the geometry to entrain the jet stream. So I think HARP is a small part of it, and just a very small part of it, that there are technologies that very few people have come on your show and talked about. And I think the orbs are one of them that deserve a lot more attention.
Why manipulate the weather?
Because it's fun. I'm serious. Because there is a power associated with that.
You're a meteorologist. Would you love to have one of these machines?
I would, first of all, like to have the understanding of what they're doing. And then I would go from there. But, you know, scientists like to experiment. And if they're truly experimenting, they can't know what they're doing. They can set up the parameters for the experiment, but then once you do it, you have to sit back and observe and see the effect. And I think we've gone through several decades where that has been happening. And I think a lot of the weather modification experimentation occurred in the 70s. That's when we see the first of the chemtrails. That's when, you know, we've got, you know, kind of a photographic library of some really unusual cloud formations happening here in the States. That's when, you know, Miami had their snow in early 77 and some incredible Arctic outbreaks. So I think the experimentation happened in the 70s, and then a refinement occurred through the 80s and 90s. And understanding that these scientists needed some markers in the sky, that they needed direct surveillance of what they were doing, led to the development of the chemtrail program. And that was born out of their blind eyes, you know, sitting back in a control room or some CENTCOM or NORTHCOM somewhere, and, you know, playing with technologies and needing real-time surveillance. And, you know, they could introduce the waves into the atmosphere and then watch them propagate out via satellite. But you really needed to have boots on the ground to see what was going on, and that required them to secure and purchase and then outfit, you know, a massive fleet of aircraft for these global operations. But I like to say, you know, once you pulse the atmosphere, it's an analogy to a child playing in a swimming pool. It may be a small child. It may be off in the corner. But those waves will eventually propagate through the entire body of that pool. And the atmosphere of this planet is the same.
So. Well, you know what's so amazing, though, Scott? No matter where you go, people are talking about the weather, you know. I mean, in Los Angeles, in St. Louis, in New York, wherever I end up going, people are talking about the weather.
And I
guess I've done that for years.
You know, it makes small talk as a weatherman very easy. they do. And what would the water cooler talk be like if on the front page of USA Today was, you know, the revelation of the chemtrails or a weather modification?
Oh, it would be huge. Scott, stay with us. We're going to come back for more. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you. Scott Stevens, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Scott Stevens. Scott, years ago, Wilhelm Reich talked about Oregon. You talk about Oregon as well. What is this?
It's the chemical ether. It is the life force. You know, it is what the Indians would interact with when they did their rain dance. And the more time I spend in this field and researching and honestly, George, just observing, and then once you understand the properties of the Oregon, that it has a curl. It's negatively entropic, which means there can be a void, but it then begins to circulate or spiral around that atmosphere and the clouds, in particular the cumulus and cumulonimbus clouds. And in the beginning, I was thinking, well, this was a function of the waves as they sheared against each other. But the waves are there, but there is this inherent curl that is within the ether, within the orgone. It can be accumulated, and I think that's one of the reasons why when we're watching the chemtrails, you know, work the sky, there are often planes stacked. They create a channel. There'll be a top plane with a short trail, a bottom plane with either a long trail or no trail. And I think these planes are capable, if you go to etheric-weather-engineering.com, one of James Trevor Constable's buddies' sites, where they talk about very, very simple technology used to stimulate the ether, to stimulate the orgone. And James Trevor Constable shared this knowledge with every single government agency, he said, in the 70s. So he gave them the playbook. And then, I'm sorry, that was probably not the wisest thing to do. You know, but yeah. Nevertheless, it happened. And so it's as simple as a tube that creates an ionization field out ahead of the aircraft. And I think that explains why these chemtrail planes fly at nearly half the speed, or slightly more than half the speed, that the commercial planes fly at. It's because they've got a certain heading. They know which way the ether is flowing around the planet. They intercept it. They accumulate it. They dam it up. The thunderstorms, the clouds, the moisture are all attracted to that action. And voila, you know, you haven't even had to fire HARP. You haven't had to pulse a scalar wave. You don't have to go to the directed energy route. It's a simple accumulation of what is already there. You create a dam, and the energy just builds and builds and builds. And so you can hold a thunderstorm nearly stationary for hours or days. It's up to you. You know, so all of the tools have been given to mankind, and they've been discovered by these open-minded, exploring scientists over the years. But we have this power structure on this planet, God help us, you know, that intercepts all of these wonderful and amazing understandings and realizations that would change the paradigm that we live in. And that's really the problem, is that humanity needs to be given back to itself. You know, we need our sovereignty back. And I think so many of our world problems would just dissolve once that happens. You know, then we can get back to building sustainable housing and proper usage of energy, and drilling would end. And, you know, but something else would come in and take its place. Other jobs would be created. Other opportunities would be made manifest.
Scott,
go ahead.
Well, it seems to me, though, that these weather patterns are stronger and more intense than ever. The tornadoes are bigger. The hurricanes are stronger.
Yeah.
The earthquakes are bigger. I mean, it just seems like things have magnified. Is that just a perception, or is it real?
I think there's a little bit of both. There's a lot of reporting that we have now via the internet, but at the same time, the planet, the climate is changing. It is changing, and whether that is directed, you know, that is wholly a function of man's technology, or that is, you know, the planet, the life force, the Gaia, you know, saying, whoa, guys, you know, I've given you free rein for a long time, and I'm going to start, you know, sending some messages your way, you know, and whether we're attentive to those, you know, it has yet to be determined. But I think it's a combination. I think the planet is absolutely changing. You know, we've got some kind of event coming in the next couple of years, and I think the planet has been very patient with mankind. You know, she's given us an invitation to go through an ascension process with her, and we can either work with her or against her. She's going regardless, and if we don't get our ducks in a row, we're going to be swimming. We're going to be swimming.
And when you say an event in the next few years, what kind of an event?
You've had no shortage of guests that have talked about something with 2012. And my feeling is that it ends up being something solar. You know, and it has been through time. It only makes sense that the sun would have a heartbeat, that there's some kind of a rhythm. And when these things happen and history is littered with quote unquote disaster events, you know, and there isn't, prophecy isn't given without a reason. It isn't given without something being seen. Now, granted, prophecy originates from a specific place in the time stream, and it looks appropriate once it's given. It doesn't mean it is always going to play out as said. However, something is going to come. Something's going to happen, and humanity needs to be in a different place consciously, you know, within ourselves and within our relationship to the earth and within our relationship to each other, you know, prior to this event coming. And I think the powers that be are doing everything they can to keep us in a victimhood stance so that we're not available and present to participate in this coming event, this awakening.
The sun activity slowly starting to pick up again. We've been lucky, Scott. We've dodged X flares. Mm-hmm. It's only a matter of time. You know that.
Indeed.
When we get hit direct, what happens?
It feels like that, doesn't it? It truly is just a matter of time. And it's interesting because climate is inexorably linked to the sun. You know, and we'd like to say it's greenhouse gases, it's CO2. Ah, come on. That is such a distraction. That is such a distraction. You know, the sun is the power supply. It is the source in the solar system. It always has been. And so our relationship to the sun is exceedingly important, and science is now being given the tools, the spacecraft, to understand more so our relationship with the sun and how there's this precious interlinkage. So many of these ancient religions had the sun at their center. You know, there was sun worship. There are massive temple complexes built all around the sun. Why? You know, why? Why was it so important? If it's not important today, and it was then, what are we missing? What knowledge has been kept from us? You know, what secrets, you know, have been kept from humanity so we don't understand our relationship to the rest of the solar system? And I look forward to that knowledge coming out, because there will be a last sunset. That will happen, and prior to a new sunrise and a big change in humanity's relationship with everything.
What's your prediction on water and droughts in the future, on crops? Because I do believe wars will be fought over these commodities,
and as they have been through, you know, all through time. I'm a believer of food storage. I think a family needs to have weeks, if not months, of food in the pantry. I think it's absolutely irresponsible and silly not to have a food stock. You know, these cities could be emptied of all foodstuffs in 3 days, and then what do you do with your children? You know, how do you feed them? Do you then, you know, grab a gun and go raiding? You know, it's just you've got to have food. I think the Russians, you're familiar with the wheat embargo that Putin had kind of dictated.
Yes,
and I think that's just a symptom of what's coming down the road. We had a close call with rice in 2008. You know, it's you have to have your necessities close at hand. You really do. And I think it's getting increasingly important that people look at their neighborhoods, look at their neighbors. If you don't know them, how can you predict or anticipate how they're going to behave in times of stress? And that's something that I would really like everyone to consider tonight. Do you know your neighbors? Have you taken the time to get out and meet them? And develop a relationship with them. I think that's one of the most important things you can do, is know your neighborhood. And we isolate ourselves, you know, when we come home from work, the garage door goes down, we go inside, and that's it. That's the extent of our interaction with our neighbors. You know, the kids may go out and meet some friends and have some relationships that way. But as adults, we don't know where we live. We really, really don't. And I think that's going to be a problem, and it could be a basis where a lot of fear would sprout from if we lose the grid, if we lose the food. You know, what we need are these wonderful, we need relationships with our neighbors, because if we go through a grid outage, if we go through a war, if we go through these trials that we've been talking about for so long, you got to have a support group, and those are your neighbors. It's just, you gotta be there. You gotta be there. And I honestly think the smaller the community, the better off it'll be. The better off it'll be. I just moved off the Front Range, you know, into the San Luis Valley. There's not a lot of people here. There's space. You know, and it really is about becoming self-sufficient, as it's so important. And there isn't going to be time for the most of the people to accomplish those preparations. It's not important to them. Some morning it will be, but right now it's not. And so you want to know your surroundings.
One of our guests has written a book called Not by Fire, but by Ice, Robert mm-hmm. Felix, and he claims that we are in the early stages of a brand new ice age. What do you think?
I think that's up to the sun to tell us. But I think the planet is an amazing organism. An amazing self-correcting organism, not so unlike our body.
You know, it's alive.
It is alive. It is alive. You know, and we like to look at it as a mechanistic, a cold. You do this, that happens. You know, it's not. It's alive, and it will balance and adjust. It's interesting because you look at the Gulf of Mexico, and there's that loop current that was in there, and after the BP blowout, you know, we were 30 days in, and there's a lot of oil. It's interesting because then. The loop current disconnected from the loop. And it was like, I can't have this infection going into the Atlantic. I can't have this going everywhere just yet. So it's like it withdrew its energy from that loop current to let it sit and spin and process the poison that's now in the Gulf. You know, it's alive. I would not at all be surprised to see us in 25 years going, how could we have been so blind not to have seen this ice age coming?
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Are you a believer in the abiotic oil theory, as I do, or do you believe in the dinosaur plankton and...
No, goodness, no. No. It's a continually regenerating resource. And part of it is we pay way too much for it, for renewable energy. It is not fossil fuel.
Right.
You know, I think I was reading an article in New Scientist where they identified the microbe responsible for the creation of gasoline and oil. You know, I think once we adjust and change that paradigm, we'll look at oil in a different way. Or we just grow it. Because if you can identify the microbe that does it, then it becomes much, much easier to farm. Although I don't know that I'd turn it over to Monsanto or Dow.
Yeah, they genetically modify it.
Well, then they would patent it, for goodness sakes. Yeah,
of course they would. It's all about money. Yeah, you know that, Scott.
Well, we're going to... That has to change. That has to change, George. It can't be about money. It just can't. You know, and I think we'll have... Karmically, we'll set up experiences so we learn that lesson. You know, universe provides these lessons, and they come at the strangest, most interesting, ironic times. And I think this country has a huge karmic debt to pay when it comes to oil. You know, how we've treated the rest of the world, how we've treated the environment, so we could drive. You know, so many other solutions have come along. You know, and we as users bear an aspect of that responsibility. We absolutely do. But I don't know that a hybrid is the answer. You know, there are other technologies that... I'd really hope this president would have been a little more aggressive about pushing out, but he hasn't. He hasn't. So we need to move beyond the right-left paradigm and into something a little more genuine.
So if you let me give you specific regions, and you tell me what some of your recommendations would be for people. Okay, let's say if you live... in the Midwest. We'll start with the Midwest. What would you do weather-wise to kind of just make life for you comfortable?
Yeah. You know, I think we've been given a gift crop-wise this season in this country. I think Russia took it on the nose, and that took a lot of energy from these technologies to pull off what's happened in Asia and Eurasia, from Pakistan to China to Russia. A whole lot of food has been taken out of the food stream, you know, for this winter. And I think crops are going to do largely pretty darn well here. But in the Midwest, you know, I love Kansas. I like Nebraska. I worked in Oklahoma. I worked there. You know, they're great people. I like the climate. The storms are exciting as all get out. But I come back to food. I come back to food. Your pantries need to be full.
So. The West, is Vegas going to run out of water?
They don't have to. They don't have to. I think with the real estate correction, that's going to take some demand out of the Colorado and Lake Mead and some of those reservoirs in the Southwest and the Colorado drainage are recovering. They kind of hit their bottom in 06.
Yeah, they were dropping, weren't they?
They really were. They really were. You know, water, I don't know that we pay the proper price for what water really costs. You know, its impact in the environment. I think water is probably not expensive enough. And it's crazy that these developers have been given such leeway in where they, you know, put up 2x4 homes, 2x6 homes. Now, there's lots of places where it's not wise to build. And yet we have massive subdivisions, you know, rolling across the hot desert. If you're going to build in the desert, you don't build, you know, regular houses. You have to go underground. You have to do what the Atlanteans did, and you dig, and you get, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 foot of soil on top of you, so you don't have that energy expense. You know, people are writing big checks to the electric company. Go ahead, be my guest.
How about your website, Scott? Give them
weatherwars.info and bluewateralchemy.com are the two sites.
And Blue Water, that's relatively new, isn't it?
I would like to talk about that when we come back because, you know, everybody asks you, well, what do you do about this knowledge? What do you do when you understand the situation of the world? And the answer is connect.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll talk about what you've been working on now, and we'll also take a full hour of phone calls with meteorologist Scott Stevens right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you want to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Scott, tell us about Blue Water Alchemy before we take calls.
This is a project that I got into last year for numerous reasons. Primarily, what Blue Water Alchemy does is we make ormus. And you've had guests on in the past, Barry Carter in particular, Lawrence Gardner, that'll talk about M-state elements. And these M-state elements are so important to the well-being of any biological entity, that plant, animal, human being. These M-state elements used to be abundant in our food stream. We could eat apricots and grapes and plants and would bring these elements, these M-state elements, into our body. And as elements are in their M-state, or the monoatomic state, they end up coming into a person's physiology, into their cells, into their chromosomes, into their DNA, and connect cell by cell via these microtubules to your energy body, to your astral body, to your light body. And once this channel is opened, information and energy can be exchanged. And we have 60 to 100 trillion cells in our bodies, each one of us. And we woke up this morning, or staying up late, and 300 billion of those cells have to be cloned today. And as these cells clone themselves, they clone all of the mistakes that are the accumulation of our life's experience, toxins, mutations, and radiation. All of that damages these cells. Now, once you get these microtubules that come in from the ormus into your body and this information channel is opened, then that cell, then that chromosome can see what it's supposed to look like off in your light body. And through that channel, that new open channel of information, it can bring back the template of what a cell is supposed to look like and manifest the cell from that, rather than just cloning all of its past mistakes. And when that happens, amazing things happen to the human body. And I've talked for chemtrails about years for years, and we know there's all kinds of metals and biologicals and all kinds of crap in them. And we don't eat the best food in this country. You know, the obesity epidemic is just symptomatic of that, and we take lots of meds. But what this does is allows the body to regenerate properly, accurately, to its own template. And as this energy connection is established between you and your energy body, your dreams become more lucid. And we talked about, you know, where you want to be when the earth changes come, or when the economy goes down. You know, why not have that guidance not come from, you know, somebody on the radio, but from your own dream state, from your own self? So the Ormus that we make at Blue Water Alchemy allows you to connect to you. And that way you can trust that guidance. And it changes lives, you know, and it only comes from salt. Salt is the only ingredient. And salt was a rarity and was precious in ancient times. It was called the manna, the elixir of life. And, you know, the common person didn't have access to, you know, an abundance of salt to be able to do this. So, yeah, check out the website, bluewateralchemy.com, I'll take questions about it, too. I'd love to talk about it.
I think you're onto something with that.
I know I am. I know I am. Because, of, you know, we've only been into this 12, 13, 14 months. Me, personally, my partner in this, it saved his life. He had a mosquito virus and had his whole nervous system just stripped bare. And he was listening to you 6 years ago, and Barry Carter was on.
Yeah.
And Barry was talking about a white liquid from heaven. And that was it, and it changed my partner's life. So, it's just something that people need in this day and age.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Julio on the wild card line in Chicago. Go ahead, Julio. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Julio.
Hi, Scott and George. George, this is actually my first time calling. I respect your work, and Scott, God bless you for what you're doing in terms of weather modification. I got into it from watching the conspiracy theory show on True TV, and I
looked
up HARP, and I stumbled on the subject. I stumbled on a document from the U.S. Army War College from August. I think it was August or April of '96. Weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025. And my mind shifted, and you know, every time I look at the weather now or look up in the sky, I constantly wonder about these chemtrails and everything. But my question for you is, with, you know, all these like weird looking clouds going on with the chemtrails, I know this is probably like a tough subject, but NASA's Project Bluebeam, does that have anything in terms of weather modification? And, you know, in all these documents I read about weather modification, they truly act like they, you know, want to be, you know, gods in shifting the weather. And do you think with the whole, you know, awakening going on in this country and worldwide, that these globalists and elitists and mad scientists are going to intensify their weather manipulation processes?
I do. You know, and George kind of brought up the topic of the intensity of these weather events appears to be escalating. You know, I think an aspect of that is natural, and I also think that to achieve their agenda, these events also have to become more extreme as they literally manipulate the fabric of society. You know, they've completely turned over Pakistan, completely turned it over. You know, and one of their goals may have been to breach the Three Gorges Bridge in China. You know, and if that were to happen, you lose 300 million people, and then China spends their foreign reserves, you know, on reconstruction in the country, rather than dumping, you know, those hundreds of billions of dollars of treasuries out on the market, collapsing our dollar. So there's all of these sub agendas, you know, going on. And you brought up the, you know, the ET or the gods things, you know, and Zachariah Sitchin's work in the Sumerians and the Anunnaki is phenomenal. It's phenomenal work. And they made no claims that they made claims that they owned the weather. So who's to say that that technology hasn't been left behind, you know, from thousands of years ago, and it's still operational? You know, you got to consider that. And maybe they have shown us how to run it. or maybe they're just doing it and giving our political structure the middle finger. You know, who knows? Who knows when you bring in exopolitics into this discussion, you know, the possibilities are truly limitless.
Scott, so, when you're with a group of weather people, mm-hmm. do you all agree? I probably not, huh?
Oh, goodness, no. Goodness, no. No, no. And I part of me finds it disturbing to be in those crowds because they're so closed-minded. They're just not there. They're vacant. They're vacant, vacant people. And they're I've talked to people who have been at NCAR up in Boulder, and they know something's up, but they don't dare talk about it with each other even.
Do tensions run high?
Apparently, because, you know, the job situation in this country is not so keen that you can, you know, be brave and, you know, talk about it and ask questions and query. You know, the previous administration was very good at squashing, you know, inquiry and trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. So, you know, they'd just rather do their jobs and continue on with the agenda as it is. There are a few meteorologists, there are a few on TV, there are a few that are in forensics. But this is kind of what, it's my disappointment or realization after being on 5 years ago with you. I really thought there would have been more movement in the community. I for me, it's so readily apparent that something is going on in the skies. It's yeah. so apparent. It's so obvious. But it also may be a function of consciousness, you know, that some people can see and others cannot, even when looking at the same thing. And that's kind of where my conclusion is we have a lot of robots walking around. And what do? You know, it's their life. They have to leave. I'm not going to lead it for them.
Let's go to Dustin, first-time caller, Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Dustin.
Oh, man, you guys have no idea how excited I am to talk to y'all. George, Scott, it's a pleasure. I'm sitting here shaking. I'm so excited. But I just want to make a couple points, and I do have a question. Really fast. You guys were talking about Gaia. You know, I take everything with a grain of salt, but I'm very, very scientific-minded, and I've been inundating myself with a lot of this knowledge for the last couple of years, and it's hard trying to put on people onto it down here, I have to say. But you guys were talking about Gaia and trying to, you know, tell us things and let us know what's going on and give us a message. Well, what you guys are doing right now is part of that message. That's that same energy that's going out and letting us, the people that are really seeking it, yeah. telling us what it is.
Well,
you know, and a man told me the other day that the true seeker of truth will find it.
Yeah.
You know,
and you have to be a seeker. You have to be a seeker. That has to be a part of your consciousness, that you're open and you're hungry. And then that information comes to you. And something I'll share with you is that I learned about 12, 13 years ago, don't discount anything. Don't judge anything. Let it come in, file it away. And eventually, as you begin to see the bigger picture, all of these other little data bits will begin to make sense. You'll create that matrix of understanding. So as you go on your search, don't judge anything. And
I understand that, like your previous guest said, you know, this universe is stranger than we could ever know. I wanted to point out something. You're talking about your blue water alchemy
mm-hmm.
site. It what you're talking about with cutting, you know, the idea of kind of cutting DNA. George, I don't know how much you guys talk about shamanism on your show,
but
a lot of things take me back. I'm sure you have. I've recently just been able to start listening because of my work schedule. But anyway, you know, with shamanism, you know, they talk about cutting DNA curses and past, you know, things connected to that. So that really reminded me of that a lot.
Well, it's amazing with this Ormus and the monoatomics, because one of the recipes we use is with the Dead Sea Salt. And in that Dead Sea Salt, there's iridium. There's the iridium element. Wow. And in its high spin state, that iridium element will drop into the end of your DNA. And that allows that twisted pair of wire, which is your genetics, to have electrons move along them at a rate nearly 10,000 times greater. So, you know, the powers that be have done such a fabulous job of fluoridating our water, destroying the food that we have, so we don't think clearly. We can't see the big picture. We don't ask the questions. And this Ormus, in a way, is a shortcut to get that gift from Gaia, her highest elements, back into your being so you resonate, you vibrate. And if we are to go through a genetic change, because there's all this chatter about a third strand, a sixth strand, or 12 strands of DNA, you want these monoatomic elements with their connection off to the light body present in your system so that if this DNA is to manifest, that it can do it quickly so that we wake up one day and we see the world with different eyes. We see a depth into a broader spectrum, and that happens far more easily with the monoatomics from Gaia in your system. So enjoy the exploration, and I feel for you, buddy. I feel for you where you are. I had to leave the Front Range and get to a community where everybody's a freak. You know,
so what got you to change? I mean, I'm sure when you started as a meteorologist, as a weather person, you were pretty traditional. I think you accepted and towed the company line. And when I say the company line, I'm saying the weather line. Something made you change, and then you changed pretty radically.
I did, but I was restless. George, in 1997, I read a book by James Redfield called The Celestine Prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like pulling a finger out of a dike. I then went, you know, I hit Amazon so hard, and I built a library. I was reading 3 and 4 books, you know, at a time. And my only prayer in all this was understanding. You know, I'm this little guy in this confusing world on this beautiful planet, looking up at the stars, wondering, why am I here? Why am I here? And so my prayer was understanding. Help me to understand why I'm here, what's my role in all this, and what can I do to help others? You know, it really became that simple, and it started with reading that singular book. And it still hasn't ended because, you know, life and this journey is eternal. You know, we have been given an eternity, and there's all of this religious fervor about you have this one life and you got to do it right, and there's this evil judgment, and death is so scary. That's all engineered crap by the overlords of this planet. You know, we are peaceful, beautiful, powerful, intelligent beings, and we need to live from that place, and we need to be able to detach from the chaos that we hear on the radio and on the TV and see around us. And when you can detach from that and not feed it any emotional energy, then they don't have you because they want you a victim. And one of the things that the monoatomics and the Ormus do is as you reconnect to yourself, there is a depth of being that manifests. And that depth, it's hard to find the end of that. It's hard to find the bottom of that. And when you can operate from that, then you're a power, you're a force to be reckoned with.
All right, we go next to Albuquerque. David's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Hi, Dave. Yeah, good to talk to you guys tonight. Enjoy the show as always.
Thank you.
Now, I'm a meteorologist out here at Kirtland Air Force Base. Been working for the military for over 20 years, and I got to tell you, I have never run into any instance of weather modification whatsoever in my entire career. So I want to know, what is your evidence for that?
Well, how would you know if you've run into it if it's always going on overhead? How would you separate?
I think what's going on overhead is contrails. I think you should familiarize yourself with contrails, not chemtrails.
Yeah.
Because there's no evidence whatsoever that the United States government is spraying their own families, their own children in the skies day and night, as you say that they are. And I'll tell you, I've been a research meteorologist for most of my adult life, and I have never run into any instance of any attempted weather modification other than some seeding of clouds with zinc. And those seeding attempts have never been very fruitful. In fact, we can't make it rain on command. We certainly can't have a cumulonimbus cloud stand still, stand stationary. I've never heard anything so absurd in my life, to be honest with you.
Didn't the Chinese say that they can manipulate the weather? I think they came out with a government statement during their Olympics.
Yeah, they did. They did. But, you know, from what information the Chinese shared with us, it was, you know, it's old. It's simply cloud seeding, which is, you know, archaic. And if you're going to do weather modification on the scale that we've been talking about tonight, you know, that the cloud seeding is not an appropriate venue. So, Dave, spend some more time outside. Truly, spend some more time outside with an open mind, not with a preconceived notion that it is impossible. If you come at it that it is impossible, then you're not being fair to yourself, and you're not honoring the scientific method.
I'd love to be a fly in a room of meteorologists, all of you together.
Well, you know, and I would love to have a group of them, you know, come to the mountains, you know, where we on a day when it's active, and we just watch. You just watch. It's that simple. But you have to know what you're looking for. Too many people look up with a quick glance and don't see the precision, don't see the geometry that the planes are exhibiting in relationship to previous trails flown.
All right.
Know, yeah. All right.
We're gonna come right back, Scott, with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Here we are with Scott Stevens, final series of questions here on Coast to Coast AM. Scott, do you travel much? City speaking engagements, anything like that?
Once in a while. I just, I firmly believe that, the beast you feed is the one that grows. And I don't know that, you know, the weather modification is really where, you know, I want to make my future. You know, it's happening. We can understand it, and we can endeavor to have it made public, so that. You know, we can change the outcome. You know, we can mitigate this a lot of the disasters that happen on this planet with some very, very inexpensive technologies. And I would like to see that happen. But I really think the energies directed towards a mass consciousness awakening are going to bear far greater fruits in the long run and probably short run as well. So that's where my energies are now, George.
Okay. Let's go to Ryan in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, Scott and George?
Hey.
To make a long story short, I'll take my question off the air, and I'll keep it brief. Would you by any chance, Scott, think that the government may just be wanting to see the reaction of the general public, or, you know, see what happens if, you know, maybe a revolution, if they, you know, push us to the brinking point or something like that?
Absolutely.
I was just wondering because I used to compulsively watch the Weather Channel when I was a kid. So, but I'll stick my question up here. You guys have a good night.
All right.
Well, I think as we talked about early on, there is a creeping disclosure, and that is going to envelop many topics: weather modification, global warming, ETs, the Federal Reserve. You know, the ancient history of this planet and archaeology. And I think they have so many lies to come clean with, and that I think they could bring out a lie a month to keep everybody in an uproar and everybody off base and to keep the static and the noise and the crap that's thrown around over the airwaves so stirred up that, you know, we forget that we need some still time, that we need... This isn't about them. This whole experience on Earth is about you and me. It's about ourselves and the progress we make ourselves. And they're giving us an incredibly powerful schoolroom to turn away from so that we, you know, we can deny them our energy. But I think disclosure of many topics will be used by them. It looks like, you know, there's leaks and they're going to get egg on their face. And they've dealt with all of that. They planned it out. It's only about keeping us disturbed and stirred up.
Well, because you're doing some work with consciousness now, do you think it's possible to manipulate weather via the mind collectively?
You know, I had a brief discussion with a guy here 2 days ago about the HAARP and the ability to carry a consciousness-disturbing wavelength on the nitrogen molecule, you know, and the atmosphere is full of nitrogen, and you, if you could pulse a particular frequency and let that nitrogen resonate, you know, that carrier, then maybe they can disturb thought patterns. You know, so they're using everything they can to achieve their agenda, whatever that particular agenda is. And I tell you, it isn't in yours and mine's best interest. And so you can know about it, but you just can't feed it. You just can't feed it. You have to. Yeah, I think we really need to get out of those places where those EM energies are so thick. You can drive through cities and they're all wired and everything's Wi-Fi and everything's surveilled. And you know, they're really kind of soupy psychic zones that are ugh, yuck. You know, get me the heck out of there. So I think the in tune person that is really concerned about their welfare will withdraw their attention and energies from the games that the powers that be are playing on, and even leave the cities and return to a quieter life. I think it'll serve you well for that to happen, and the sooner the better.
East of the Rockies, TJ is in Iowa. Go ahead, TJ.
Scott Stevens. How you been? I used to think you were late for the party, but I think you're almost in full attendance now. You should have my private number in your underground Rolodex, but that Dave, the alleged military meteorologist, evidently he's never been out of doors, never studied history, or he's wearing a blue beret. I don't know which.
Probably all the above.
all of the above for certain, Scott Stevens. I hope you still have my phone number, but anyhow, let's discuss the corn and soybeans, two of the most toxic crops to human health there is, and they're just booming this year due to weather modification and the Chicago Weather Exchange. Get into Barry Saturno's Weather Exchange Stock Exchange, could you, Scott, for just a minute? And I'm going to part your company now, but call it right every chance you get, and God bless you.
Well, people ask why. You know, why do this? The only reason they would spend billions of dollars or trillions of dollars for the aircraft is so that they can rig the game. And then you create a financial instrument or a whole litany of financial instruments where their value is derived from events and weather. And then you trade it. And then you bring in the suckers that are clueless about it, and then you continue to fleece them. You know, it's all about the dollar. It's all about the economy. You bring a Katrina in, it costs $40 billion, you know, and that's $40 billion that Congress doesn't have to go and pass a stimulus for. It's about keeping the economy lubricated. I was talking about this with a State Farm's adjuster a couple of months ago. You know, and I said, you know, we don't have to have these disasters. These things don't have to happen. A large portion of them can be mitigated. And he's like, well, I'm out of a job then. He doesn't have to go out and survey hail damage on roofs and crops
and adjust.
And cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and adjust. Exactly, and adjust. So we need to find, you know, another source of jobs. And maybe it's in transportation, because every time this country or this society has gone through, you know, the Erie Canal or the railroad or the telegraph, you know, communications and transportation, that's where you get big leaps in evolutions of society. And, you know, we have, a post office here, but why don't we have a train stop? You know, we're remote, but, you know, everybody should be connected. You know, then we deal with our carbon emissions. And, you know, there's so many things that could happen if we had leadership. And that's what this planet is sorely lacking, is leadership.
It's all about
leadership.
The money, Scotty. You know that.
It's all about the money. It's time to move through the money. You know, we can have another system.
Wars,
and maybe it's
money.
A money system where at the first of the month, everybody gets monies credited to their accounts. And it expires in 3 months. You can't save it. You can't lend it. You can give it away.
Or spend it. You have to spend it.
And that's it.
Let's go to Eric, Lexington, Kentucky. You're on with Scott Stevens. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning, Scott, and good morning, George.
Morning,
it's a
Eric.
Pleasure and an honor. I had a couple questions about global warming and the weather.
Okay.
First being about liquid nitrogen. Are you familiar with it?
I know that I don't want to stick my fingers in it.
Okay, so the question would be is, since they're talking about manipulation of the weather, could they or could they not, say, take X amount of liquid nitrogen and deploy it and drop it into the ocean where all the icebergs are starting to break up and decay and decrease in size and rebuild that ice path once again with the liquid nitrogen?
Well, then to create the liquid nitrogen, you're going to have to extract the heat out of it and put it somewhere. Usually that's done through refrigeration. So all you're doing is moving heat from one form to another. Why not do what Colonel Bearden talks about, and that's use a scalar interferometer? And then what you do is, in endothermic mode, you take the heat out of the ocean and drop it in the time domain. Why not?
Interesting.
Yeah. And so we literally pull the energy out of this reality and drop it in time and let it be. You know, and that's one of the ways that they use to enhance hurricanes or thunderstorms is pull a little heat off the top of these clouds. And you need the chemtrails to align the geometry so the guns, if you will, the interferometers, know where to go, where to see. And so you'll have the chemtrails over the tops of the thunderstorms, literally outlining where they're going to be in 30 minutes, and aligning the line of thunderstorms. You can almost any big thunderstorm, you can hear the jets overhead. Just listen for them. They're there. They're low and slow. And, you know, you pull 3, 4, 5 degrees Celsius off the top of, a 40,000-foot cell. You increase the instability of the atmosphere, and the updraft becomes more violent. It's very simple. It's very simple. And nobody sees it.
You know, I appreciate getting the opportunity to talk about it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. But read up on Colonel Bearden's work and the time domain. The time domain is huge. It is the auger that drives this reality, and all energy comes from the time domain.
Tristan's in Santa Cruz, California, the Wild Card Line. Hi, Tristan.
Hey, I've been listening to you guys for a long time, and I'm very happy to finally hear an entire show about chemtrails. And I was so impressed to finally hear a meteorologist with some gall. thanks a lot for what you're doing. Your colleagues are all spineless. I would also like to remind anybody who attempts to debunk chemtrails, if you don't already know that it's that what you're debunking is something that is real, look into it. And if you are debunking it for monetary reasons, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, it just sounds foolish, you know, debunking something that we recognize and can measure and can see and can photograph, and, you know, there is no evidence. That's crap. That's crap. There's only evidence because you haven't looked. And if you're so deluded by your belief.
What I was saying was, it's very interesting to me, the propaganda that's being put out by people like NASA, National Geographic, and various school textbooks telling children that they are normal clouds that are made by airplanes and water vapors, and literally showing grids in the sky. I think it's very scary. And I also wanted to talk about the health effects of heavy metal poisoning, general lethargy, thyroid impairment, all these things. People might want to think about taking some iodine and also looking into MMS, Jim
yep.
Humble's MMS.
Yep.
I've got an ebook online for free. MMS is amazing and will help chelate your body. It's dirt cheap and will really help your immune system.
I'll tell you this. I have taken MMS today. I also, the Ormus is fantastic at cleansing and detoxing. And between the two, you know, the Ormus that we make and the MMS should be able to deal with, you know, a huge percentage of the toxins that we're confronted with on a daily basis, voluntarily and involuntarily, because sometimes we choose to eat Doritos and sometimes we would like not to breathe the air outside. You know, so our bodies carry everything we've eaten. Now, these things like to jump off. So, the MMS and the Ormus are fantastic at getting that out of your system and dealing with the lethargy, and the endocrine system slowing down or shutting down, and a weakened immune system and viruses that jump a hold. So explore those two options for your health. Absolutely.
All right, Tristan, thank you. Josh is in Portland, Oregon, all over the country tonight. Go ahead, Josh.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How's Portland tonight?
Portland is always good, man. There's a lot of strip clubs there.
It's a beautiful city.
Hey, Scott, how's it going, buddy?
Great, great. What you got for us tonight?
Well, I just want to ask you, how do you present the audience, which is the Art Bell audience, with such a convicting sense of this ambience, if you don't mind? And I know that may be an odd question, but you have something about you that really makes me pay attention.
Maybe it's the message. Maybe it's the message. You know, it's not the weather modification. It's not the chemtrails. It's about us empowering ourselves so that we can change the world. But you only do that by changing yourself first. And I think we all spend, and I am so guilty of this, of spending so much attention on them. And that's not where, they're not worthy of it. They're not worthy of your attention. It doesn't mean you need to be ignorant of what's going on around the world, but don't feed it. It's not worth it.
Do you have to hit people over the head now, Scott, to listen to this, or is it a little easier than it
is? No, bring up the chemtrail topic, and about 50-50 people have heard about it, or at least the people that I'm interested in talking with. You know, I have friends that live in the Southeast, and bless their hearts. You know, there's a whole... There, this country is divided into different aspects of consciousness. You know, there are places where it's like going 50 years back, you know, and I would really, really struggle to live in one of those locations. It would be rough for me.
We're putting in a polling system pretty soon on our website called Instapoll, which will give us immediate polling results. And what a great question to ask, for example. Do they believe in the chemtrails? Do they think that something's going on? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And we'd get instant results back, and it'd give us great feedback even for this program with you.
Well, what I struggle with is people, because of their preconceived notions of what they believe reality to be, can deny that something exists. And that just, I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't get it. You know, how can you be a scientist? How can you be a researcher and be closed-minded? You just can't be. You're not worthy of your paycheck if that's how you approach your job. You're not worthy of it. But then again, you know, then they're a government employee, and you can't ask these questions. You're not supposed to ask these questions. And
well, so, when you said there are about 50-50 of people who are aware, who aren't, in terms of meteorologists, how many meteorologists agree with you?
I would say the number's less than a quarter. Absolutely less than a quarter.
I would say even lower than that, maybe.
It may be. But, you know, I honestly have no desire to go to the conferences and to rub shoulders and talk with them. You know, and that doesn't mean that some relationships couldn't be cultivated and generated out of that kind of experience. But why? You know, I just don't see the payoff there. I just don't see it. You know, there's other places where your energies are better spent. And I know that one day we're going to wake up and there will be a spark of awareness. You know, it's like heaven is reaching down to us and giving us all of that energies that it can, but we have to extend the effort to reach up. We have to be grasping and not in a religious fervor second coming kind of thing, but in an honest, I'm doing it for me and for my brother and that kind of attitude. And then a connection can be made. And where I am in Southern Colorado, there's going to be a spark. There will be a snap, a connection. And once that little flicker of light happens, then it can begin to happen in other places around the globe, and that is what the powers that be fear is.
Thank
us
you so
empowering
much,
ourselves.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.